the textile feedstock. Let's not call it waste now. It's feedstock. If it's going to be transported to Nairobi, it means that the ETS scheme in Netherlands needs to accompany that bill or that container with a certain amount of euros to make sure that organizations like ACT are able to put in place infrastructure on how to treat that textile when it gets to end of life.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Welcome back to Circularity FM and our series on circular entrepreneurship in Kenya. In this episode, we have not one, but two guests driving the future of textiles in Africa. First, we hear from Alex Muzembe, co-founder of Africa Collect Textiles, a pioneering company building a formal system to collect and give new life to post-consumer textile waste in Kenya and Nigeria. We are also joined by Sarah Niao from Green Forest Solutions, an environmental compliance company working to establish extended producer responsibility schemes around the world. Together, we talk about the process of collecting and creating new products from textile waste, the realities of a market flooded with unregulated secondhand imports, and why extended producer responsibility, or EPR, is essential for building a viable circular textile economy. But before we start, I have an offer for you. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Thanks for hosting me here. And it's really incredible to see all the operations. Let's start with ACT, Alex. What is ACT doing and why did you start it in the first book?
My name is Alex Muzembe. I'm one of the co-founder of Africa Collect Textiles. And I work here in Kenya and also in Lagos, Nigeria, is to collect post-consumer textiles, basically for reuse and recycling. And the question of how we are doing that, we are providing the public with convenient drop-off point where people can be able to dispose the used items. And especially, we are talking about the textiles and the footwear, yeah? And then how, again, we collect the items. We do a lot of door-to-door pickup where people schedule. And then our logistic teams goes around to make sure these items are collected from their homes. Then also we have a collection centers at one of the biggest market here in Kenya. It's called the Komba Market, where we are fishing and collecting all kind of specific materials, yeah, be it cotton, be it in terms of pant, like co-drive, polyester mixed blend, because sometimes you want to experiment for with different clients for specific production. And then also we are key service providers for private security groups here in Kenya. For example, we collect used uniform for SGS security company, KK security company, other organization like conservation wildlife, like Sheriff Wildlife Trust, etc. So with all this, once we collect the items, they're brought here in the facility. And then we have our second business model whereby we do sorting. So from sorting, we sort according in two ways. For example, the wearables are put aside and then wearables are put aside. With the wearables, then they have to redistribute it back to the market, especially to our women resellers in the rural part of Kenya. This I'm talking about Murang'a, I'm talking about Moya, Meru, among many other counties where we are having our wholesalers who are doing that. For non-wearable stuff, then we further sort it again. We get cotton material, then for a client, then we put it aside. And then for other stuff, like let's say jeans or khakis or corduroys, then we put aside. And then that's where we have the application of upcycling, because then we have not gone in at a bigger scale to really process so much volumes. So at a small scale, then we have developed different line of product for ourselves and also for our client designing the product and us producing the items. So that's the element of upcycling. So through all these processes, then it explains our journey from collecting up to marketing and sales.
And when we come back to collecting, do you pay money to people who drop off clothes at your collection points? Or?
Yeah, it's much easier when we incentivize the institution as opposed to the individuals, because then with the individuals, it can be quite a challenge. But for the institutions we are working with, we make sure we put aside 10 Kenya shilling per kilogram for every kg we collect. So how they are going to use the money, they have also their different program. Understand, like, for example, institutions of higher learnings, they put this money aside and they can add it as a buffer in adding or topping up to make sure they can add as a means of paying fees to vulnerable students. Other partners who are not interested with the 10 Kenya shilling per kg, then we make sure it is distributed through our selected programs. For example, this case, we are having a children somewhere, we are making sure they're getting this money. So as opposed for them to get the clothes, we make sure, because then the needs of the children, you have the needs of clothing is one of them, you have the needs of school fees, medical, operational, like admin, so there are quite many. So that's why we prefer to give them money as opposed to giving them the clothing itself.
Yeah. And one big topic when we talk about textile in Kenya and Africa is also, let's say, the second-hand textile coming from Europe. Is this also a stream you tap into?
Yeah, we're having a collection center at Gikomba Market where we are also collecting volumes of specific materials. Then with our partners, we can be able to recycle or downcycle.
Okay. And so this is about what is ACT doing right now. Why did you start it together with the co-founders?
Well, for me personally, I would say it was more of an experience thing, because then I worked with this company in the Netherlands. They had local programs here in Kenya. And then I came to understand the effect of second-hand clothing in the Kenyan market, because then that company where I was working with, it was a textile collecting company in the Netherlands. Therefore, they used to collect all kind of second-hand clothing in the Netherlands. They were also big, and I think they're also still big, because lastly, so they are collecting more now than 25 million kilograms of post-consumer textile annually. So meaning their collection is quite big. So through that, then we got traction, or rather embedded into the issue of textile and how it's affecting the global south. This is the reason why we set up the ACT, to be able to make sure we can be able to solve the problem.
Okay, wonderful. Sarah, let's talk a bit about Green Forest Solution. What's Green Forest Solution?
Our Green Forest Solutions, our GmbH, is actually a German company, with its HQ in Bayern. We are an environmental compliance company where we work with organizations like Bogusa, Adidas, Nike, H&M, Zara, and other organizations, and also governments. And in terms of policy when it comes to environmental matters. And here, specifically speaking about extended producer responsibility. However, we are just a portion of a bigger company, group of company called Rainbow Forest Solutions, which has Black Forest Solutions, which specializes in transboundary movement of waste and other functionalities of waste management, all the way to building infrastructure.
Sarah, can you tell us a bit more? In what way are you collaborating with ACT?
So one of our key products in East Africa and Kenya specifically is to do a textile ECP. And ACT is one of the leading collectors and the hub systems when it comes to taking care of post-consumer textile waste. So Currently, we work together closely just to understand the whole ecosystem from what he has explained from collection. What are the challenges that actually his ideas are currently are facing, and also to understand the pain points when it comes to costing. For us, that is very important because you are going to use that to know how much APR keys you are going to save that will be paid by the producers. So that's our current working relationship, which has been there for a near club now. I've learned a lot. There's a crash course on blends. I was not very good in chemistry. Now I understand blends. Still, it's a crash course, but also a very interesting aspect. And also just to understand that even these secondhand clothes to secondhand clothes, another process whereby if this pair of jumpsuits that I'm wearing can no longer fit me, it's still in good condition. And then it is also benefit someone when I deposit, I drop it off at in one of the ACT drop-off points. And that means we are providing through them, through that process, we are able to provide affordable clothing and decent lives to the community. Yeah.
And Alex, can you maybe elaborate a bit why extended producer responsibility scheme is important for your business?
The extended producer responsibility is very important because Africa or the global south, they lack the infrastructure. Yeah. And that's operational itself is very expensive to set up the collection system. Whether we are talking about setting up the mechanical recycling, chemical recycling, setting up awareness itself. Overall, this is why it's very crucial. The infrastructure components is the reason why the EPR is very key and which needs to be implemented.
And when we say EPR, are we talking about like a national international system? And maybe to start with, at Kenya, what's the status of EPR and textiles in Kenya?
In my opinion, it should be both national and international. So there are conversations about the alternate EPR scheme for textile and other products that have now that continuity or circularity in themselves through the secondhand process. I'll start with the national one. It's because we also have our own producers in the country. Currently, we have a regulation that is under injunction because of our court case. So implementation and enforcement of EPR currently in the country is on hold until we wait to hear what happens on the 23rd of September. I don't know by then if this podcast will have aired. But textile is one of the products that is obliged in the country for EP. When it comes to international, is because to promote circularity, secondhand clothing system would not die. One is because our quality comes in place, affordability comes in place. Currently, Kenya is the bio market when it comes to both buying our secondhand clothes and new clothes. It depends with how economically well off you are. But as Alex has mentioned about infrastructure, there's a lot of our secondhand clothes that comes into the global south and here, Kenya specifically, and we need a solution for that. And organizations, for instance, the EPR schemes in Netherlands, their WAP will be at what point they collect the textile feedstock. Let's not call it waste now. It's feedstock. Then if it's going to be transported to Nairobi, it means that the EPR scheme in Netherlands needs to accompany that bill or that container with a certain amount of euros to make sure that organizations like ACT are able to put in place infrastructure on how to treat that textile when it gets to end of life. So the ultimate EPR has to come in place. It's going to face its own challenges before we get it right because of traceability, monitoring and evaluation, loopholes when it comes to importation, which are everywhere. So who declares what they are bringing in or not? And also what defines is, what is the definition of textile waste, for instance? Is it defined at drop-off point or after set? So that will also be very crucial when we are looking at the alternate EPR.
And what you just explained right now, is this already implemented in some of the regulations? So that, for example, in the Netherlands, if some of the textile that will be sent to Kenya, that this already is like the regulation already allows pay fees for that? Or is it something we need to add to then also European regulation?
So that is something we are currently discussing with the EPR schemes in Netherlands to see actually a pilot to see how best that could work. So currently the conversations are at high level, just discussing the best way out to set out the best monitoring and evaluation and traceability processes. So that is the current conversation. But ultimately, with the conversations that are happening, it's going to find its way in the regulations, but not now, but it's work in progress. Yeah.
Okay. So let me try to summarize, if I understand correctly, especially in the case of ACT, you basically have two material income streams. One is the domestic stream with the collection points by people and companies, and the other one is then throughout the market where second-hand textiles from Europe come into place, and especially for that, the EPR connection to other countries is important. So, when we come back to Kenya, you said you have some collection points. Can you elaborate a bit more how the market looks like? Is this a common thing in Kenya to have drop-off points for textiles?
It's not a common thing in Kenya because the business we're operating now, we can say we're operating in a new emerging economy. Like, no one has ever done this before. Therefore, for other waste like plastic, paper, people understand it very, very well. That's why you have these bins outside there where people, and especially in a very controlled area like in malls, or even estate, you see like a bin for plastic and people just put plastic there, yeah? But then for textile, few people quite understand why we even want to collect second-hand clothing again, which has been used and reused again by other people. So that means it's not even a second-hand, it's like fourth-hand, fifth-hand. So it's a common culture now we are trying now to introduce into the system, into the market, because we find it to be very important, because once it's structured, then people get it right.
And I can imagine even, let's say, without organizations, pioneering organizations like ACT, there is already a second-hand textile market. So the Kenyans just, if they have clothes they don't want to use anymore, that they try to sell that second-hand on the market. This is happening already?
In a different scale, culture-wise, we have all clothing in our homes, in our wardrobe. So we, even in thousands of, or even decades, we are used to giving our clothing to our brothers or even to our neighbors. We went to the homes or people who were in need. So the issue of circulation of textile has been there even before, yeah? But what we're trying to say and why ACT is existing is to give that element of the structure, if you get what I mean, because not everyone would like also to give out their clothing to the other person, especially, you know, culture plays a different role. For example, there's a research that we did before we set up the organization. One of the things that came out was people were very uncomfortable, for example, to give their textile to their neighbor because there was this feeling of voodoo and witchcraft. And even the issue of feeling whereby when you give someone like secondhand, previously people were not understanding it very well. What do you want to give me a secondhand item? Are you trying to underpin me or are you trying to underlook me? That's why you are giving me secondhand. So people then tend to withhold more of their textile as opposed to the Europeans, you know what I mean? So the issue of underlooking, the issue of voodoo and witchcraft, these are elements where people like, they are very careful in giving out their materials. people say that if there was a structure or if there was a system and they can donate their used items anonymously, then they're willing to do that. And that's where we thought, wow, if that's the case, then we should start these drop-off point things.
Yeah. And the aspect of a textile that kind of reached its final end of life, where you need to talk about recycling. I mean, right now in Kenya, you don't have the option to send it to Africa, so to say. Where does it go?
Yeah, to answer your question, that goes into waste. Normally, it goes into our collection bins, or if they are sorted in the market, because they are quite a different market in Kenya, then they are thrown away or they go to the landfill. But again, the solution, as much as we're talking about the EPR, then the world, or even the key stakeholders when it comes to other brands, we all need to think about redesigning. Yeah, because if we produce and redesign a garment or clothing that can be recycled, that will be the case. But if we just produce items that will be worn and then will not be used anymore, that will be the effect. And this is the current system, what is happening. So in as much as we are talking about the EPR, then let's not also not forget about the designing again.
Worse.
So designing is very important, because then it determines the recyclability of a different component of materials.
Yeah. And when we talk about designing in the context of textiles, so what are the crucial elements, where you say it has importance?
Yeah. The most important thing, when you have like a mixed blend, for example, when in our clothing you have a totally mixed blend, how do we even separate that? Yeah, it's difficult. But I can imagine if you're having a mono kind of a blend in a material, let's say it's cotton, you can mix cotton with other virgin cotton to get a brand new garment. So to recycle it becomes easier the other way around.
I also learned that ACT is producing items that you're actually selling. And one of your co-founders, Elmar, mentioned it's also about selling back to Europe. So how does that look like?
Yeah, as I said, we are doing upcycling. Mm-hmm. And it's the responsibility of everyone. It's not about the locals. It's the responsibility to make sure they promote business like this and they buy from us. Because the more we're able to generate more revenue and income, the more we can get money to continue building the collection and processing infrastructure. That's why it's very important.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of products are you producing and selling?
We produce a different line of product. For example, we home decor stuff. And we're talking about the rugs. We're talking about the kitchenware, like the oven mitts.
Apron.
And we have another client who comes in to place orders because they want specific things, not necessarily what we have in line, but they really want to have their own designs. So these are local partners, these are international partners who comes together and to place an order with us. It can be shopping bags for a supermarket. It can be still the same, like home decor stuff, pillows, etc.
You have access to textiles, and you want to give it a second life, either by directly selling it secondhand or by creating new products. So I learned that there are, of course, also other textile producers in Kenya. Do they reach out and say, hey, you are interested in sourcing recycled garments from you or getting access to stock?
To answer your question, first, because it's all we're doing is a bit contextualized, and does not mean it's cheap also. So when it comes also to like a raw material, does it not necessarily like we are cheap? In fact, we're even like a more price compared to like a competitor, the Chinese.
Yeah.
For example, I know like we have tailors here. We have our own designers who produce clothing. But the clothing that is produced in Kenya is very expensive as compared to clothing that's produced in China or Turkey or where. For example, if you go to Italy, you will get clothing at a very affordable price than if somewhere like a tailor makes you like a kitenge or like your own outfit. So there's that also dynamic. And then that also will come with the issue of the business case, for example. Then they deal with mass production. And maybe this is the reason why there's a lot of affordability. There's also input costs like electricity. So production of the electricity in Kenya, maybe it's quite pricey as compared to electricity in Europe or not in Asia like China. So there's a lot of dynamic why, like, in terms of pricing, things will never be the same, yeah? And that's why this element of the EPR system or scheme will come to really help and solve most of the issues and most of the problems.
Coming back to the EPR, can you explain us a bit more? What is part of the pilot, the collaboration? What are the questions you're trying to answer?
So our key questions here are what kind of material, so the quality, because that affects, as he mentions, the recyclability aspect, the volumes, they actually upcycle and recycle, then also to understand the costs per stage. What is the cost of connection? What is the cost of sorting? What is the cost of storage? What is the cost of treatment? And eventually, what are the profits that they make out of that? And then from that, we are able to get the actual EPR fee that will be set to the producers. So that is what we've been currently working on. And also to understand the consumerism behavior in the country. So that is basically it, but also a lot of crash course. Because also one of the pippins I have learned is that we have so many blends. They have challenges with fast fashion. What are we going to do with fast fashion when it gets to that? The quality of the strips will be very poor. If they are going to go, for instance, if someone decides to set up a chemical recycling facility for textile, what are you going to do with very poor quality nylon, polyester? So that is the kind of questions that we are currently pondering with each other, just to understand the whole ecosystem.
And the learnings you're getting there together, they inform then the government or the government's institution in setting up the specific definitions.
Yes, so that is the main purpose. So for instance, with the EPF is how much is it going to cost? And then now we can discuss with NEMA, which is the National Environmental Management Authority of Kenya, to set just a minimum EPR fee. Then that will be, but also on our end, we have formed our own EPRC podcast. So that is our own way of also tending to advise the government on the best ways to work with and also collaborating in EPRC. For instance, E.R. Klingetalan, who have worked with me this journey or since last year, just to understand what are the right key scenarios we are going to face, because different ecosystems, similar challenges, but very different. So for them, they do all the way up to sorting corrosions. Then for us here, we have to do all the way to infrastructure. So the ETRT sets in Europe will be very different to the PKRCs that are set here. For instance, a blend here that it cannot be used here, but can be used in Uganda. Then what happens to it? The other thing is, keeping on EPR is to also advise the brands themselves of what he mentioned about the quality of garments that is produced. Our other thing is on designing, so for instance, on the colors of dye, because that affects the mechanical and chemical recycling of textile, because very poor dyes tend to contaminate the water very far. You're trying to conserve the environment, so there's a lot of nuance changing water at the other time. And to inform that DPR, we also inform on, I think it's SDG number 13 on responsible consumption and production. So that is the whole aspect for it to do an EPR in Qatar.
Okay. So you, Bob, you already mentioned fast fashion, circular textile in Kenya. Where do you see it, the impact of that?
Issue of when you do overproduction, then you trigger what we call overconsumption, because every day then you want to bring something that is trendy. And with the young people and even millennials and older people, everyone wants to look good. So just the way she said, you see clothing very nicely in a mannequin. After some few months, 2 or 3 months, you want is the same clothes that I really like I bought. So at the first instance, it's excellent. But after some months, it's not excellent. So that's where quality comes in. Designing comes in. And this has to be go hand in hand. Because if we're just producing things cheaply so that people can wear, then we are creating a waste problem. So design also really matters here. And that should, like, the brands need to think about that.
And what about the demand issue? Do you see, like, a reduced demand for secondhand clothes in Kenya already because of Atara?
The problem, while, like, the challenge you are facing in terms of waste in form of textiles that is being imported, I'll say there's a mismatch between what we want and what's being brought here. For example, if you go to Gikomba market, I've seen Chinese belts. No one is interested to buy Chinese belts because the clothing are a bit quite small. While Kenyans, they're known to be a bit fatty than them or bigger than them. Americans, they are quite like a gigantic or giant. And then Kenyans are like medium. So if you also import American clothing here, for example, the Dockers pant, DTC, or LeBron James kind of trousers, then no one is going to buy that. And also people are finding it difficult to like trim so that it can fit. Because as soon as you're starting trimming the clothing, it will never be in a perfect shape that you want. Yeah. So all these contribute towards the textile waste. So I'm not saying them selling mitumba or secondhand clothing to the global south is bad, because the best way they can do is reusing, which is a very good model for them. Yeah. And for us, we need to contextualize this. But what we are saying is a problem when there's a mismatch between what is being brought here. There's what we call it's an uncontrolled sector. Yeah. Anything can come in. And that's why we are saying it's like Kenya or Africa is a dumping site because it's not controlled. So once traders cannot sell the belts, what happens? Then it goes into the other field. I've also experienced another thing. People also hide the unregulated stuff inside the containers. For example, there are stuff that they're not supposed to come into the country, Kenya. But also with the infiltration, with the custom, which is also our own problem, allowing such things to come in because you're being bribed and you allow, for example, handkerchief socks to come in, underwears to come in, while legally those items are not allowed in Kenya. That tells you there's a system problem.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to make money and everyone wants to do weird things to make sure they have really made money, whether be it in Kenya or be it in the global north. Is the intention everyone to make sure they make revenue. So with all these then and regulation and infiltration, it contributes massively towards the waste problem. Yeah. And that's where there's a lot of denial globally. So the global north is trying to say what you guys are saying doesn't make sense. And the global south now are throwing again the blame game. You guys need to be accountable. But there has to be soberness. And that's why this scheme is very important, to make sure they bring soberness within the system itself. There's no system at place. It has to be defined.
Yeah.
Just to top up on something he has mentioned about illegal products coming in, the blame is on both sides, port of exit and port of entry. So you'll find the inspectorate in any of the European countries is not aware that East Africa has a East Africa secondhand trade standard of what is expected to come into the country. And then also maybe even the inspector at the point of entry is also not aware of this regulation or standard that is there. So there's need now for a government to government and regulator to regulators and any other bodies to actually have that awareness creation on what actually is allowed into the country or not allowed into the country. And then those mitigations will be done at both port of entry and port of exit. So that's also very important also to understand there.
Sounds like still a lot of work to do.
Yes.
Let's look into the future.
Where do you want to be, or where do you see ACT in 3 to 5 years from now?
For the next 1 year to 3 years, we now want to annually collect and process about 1 million kgs, because when you do upcycling, it's still at a very small scale. When you do mechanical recycling, you can do things at a bigger scale. So that means we want to collect more and we want to recycle more. That's where we want to be.
So what about you?
For us, I would want to actually set up a functional EPR scheme in the country. Actually, it will be the first thing that blows us out, according to my knowledge, as it is said. But also to make it functional, to make it more relevant to the recyclers and the waste heaters per cause. Two is also to contribute to the global conversations of defining what is a global or the ultimate EPR scheme for textiles. And finally is just to drive the conversation of product design to the brands at that level. So those are, I think those are the big three things that I hope to accomplish in the next 2 years.
Awesome. So what kind of people who are listening should reach out and support you, or where you can support Sarah?
So for us is EPR schemes globally. So I would like just to mention a few that have worked with Seamless in Australia, the ELP Netherlands and Lando Group, Kenya Wiley. He's a professor at Georgetown University. So would want to connect more with other global EPR skills and also brands that are doing products and they don't know how to do it. They are willing to do it, but they don't know how to do it. So we could be able to work with them, whether they have a retail shop in Kenya or any other country within this African community. So those are the kind of, and even individuals who want to actually walk the sustainability journey, so would be able to walk with him.
Wonderful. Alex, what about you?
At the current moment, locally, we want to make sure our collection centers are everywhere, including supermarkets. They should, theoretically, they understand what is circular economy on paper, but they're not implementing it, while they're also selling different brands of clothing, be it Zara, be it H&M, be it Nike, be it Adidas. So it's their responsibility to make sure Africa collect textiles bins in their supermarkets everywhere. When they see ACT, they know what it means. Internationally, we are calling for corporate or companies to place an order with us to buy our upcycled product at the current moment. We can be able to support more jobs, and we can make sure that infrastructure we are talking about is there. So we're not asking give us money directly. We are asking if you support us, then with the profit we can generate, we can be able to build up the system itself. Of course, we are calling other people like the financiers. These are the investors. They can come in, let's have a business case and let's discuss how they can invest in us and how we can do business together. We are calling other knowledge partners like manufacturers of machine for mechanical recycling to come on board to contact us, because also selecting the right machine for the right application in Kenya can be a challenge and can be a problem. And that's why having a very good knowledge partner who can really guide us and help us in making sure we are doing what is right. These are the people who really love to connect with.
Am I allowed to add? It's the researchers, or for us as an EPR scheme, we are looking for people who have knowledge in textile recycling. to Kanumbu, because one of the key things that we'd want to do is to have a market survey just to understand how the market is like. So I had mentioned that earlier. So we are looking for researchers and be willing to walk with us that journey could be very important, because what Alex has mentioned about the quality, once the pair of genes has been worn for more than 5 or 10 years, then the machine that was set originally for it is very different to what is going to be used for it to be on the platform. So I'm looking for researchers.
Cool. Fantastic. Thanks a lot for giving us these insights.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our series on circular entrepreneurship in Kenya. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.